The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Wednesday's edition of the Football Social Daily. Yep, we find ourselves slap bang in the middle of the week. But if you're feeling a bit tired, if you're feeling a little bit sluggish as we hit Wednesday, then never fear, because here on FSD, we have ordered you a cold, crisp pint of Carabao. Yes, perfect for a Wednesday morning. 8 games sponsored by some sugary midweek madness. The last 16 of the Carabao Cup is the focus across FSD for the next few days. And on today's show, we'll be reviewing and previewing each game right the way across the last 16. Right then, in part one, we'll be looking backwards at last night's action. Arsenal knocked out Premier League rivals Leeds, and Chelsea edged out a shootout win against Southampton. They're both in the hat for the last 8. And then in part two, we'll be previewing tonight's action with 8 other Premier League teams bidding to join them as we face 5 games in the Carabao Cup this evening. Right then, let's get straight into it. My name's Fergal Brennan, and joining me as ever, we have our very own Marley Anderson. Morning, Marley.
Morning, guys. How are you doing? You all right?
Very good, very good. Basking. I'm sitting in a bath of Carabao. That's all right. Pleased I am with
you. Have you ever tasted Carabao? I don't think I've ever had it. I've never even seen a can on the shelves, I don't think.
No.
I got given it once for free, and just out of sheer politeness, I did try it, and it is indescribably bad.
Oh, wow.
Indescribably bad.
Some endorsement,
that. You know what? I'm going to Google it during the podcast. It reminds me of the drink that the monsters drink in Futurama, if you know what I mean. If any Futurama fans, I'm going to Google it and find out what the name of that is, because that's what it reminds me of. Right, energy drinks aside, alongside Marley, we have a man whose beloved Manchester City don't care if it's Capital One or Carabao, they just love the League Cup. It's Manchester City fan Matt Pidd. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm all right. Slightly offended because we're kings of the Carabao and you're slagging it off.
I'm not slagging it. That's what I'm saying. Capital One, Carabao, whatever it is, whatever random sponsor it is, Manchester City will give it a crack, because Pep Guardiola absolutely loves the Carabao Cup. Manchester City obviously coming up in part two of the show. They're in the previews. They're in action tonight against West Ham. But we're going to review last night's games first. Marley, Arsenal 2, Leeds 0. Pretty straightforward, pretty routine in the end for Arsenal, but a necessary performance and a win based on their recent run. 8 games unbeaten in all competitions now for Arsenal. Just one defeat in 10, stretching all the way back to August when they lost or got hammered by City. Despite the fact that Arsenal do seem to have turned the cliched corner under Arteta and performing well, driving themselves up the Premier League table, the question's never far away from, oh, this is exactly the game that Arsenal lose, or on a cold midweek night, can they do it, blah, 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 blah. So whilst this game might have been, you know, a little bit of a non-starter in terms of being particularly exciting for a midweek game, it was essential that Arsenal won, because despite the progress that Arsenal are making and Arteta is making, there's always still these question marks, and every single time Arsenal go out onto the pitch, they need to tick a bit of a box.
Yeah, they do. I feel like with Arsenal, you're only ever one defeat in any competition, really, from everybody then going, oh, God, it's bad. What's Arteta doing? Is he the man for the long term? Can he really turn this team round? And they've sort of, like, snuck together this 8-game unbeaten run. Like, you don't really notice that. You don't really look at the weekend's fixtures and go, you know, oh, Arsenal are on a really good run. They'll hammer whoever they're playing at the weekend. Like, when they've turned over Aston Villa really comfortably on Friday night, and you were thinking, like, oh, they're actually playing quite well. If you watch that game, they did play really well. They dominated Villa from start to finish.
Yeah.
But it was, it's important for Arsenal to keep winning, because, you know, as we said, like, as you sort of alluded to there, if they'd have lost last night against Leeds, it'd have been like, you know, you're just seeing a lot of people going, oh, well, Arsenal should be targeting the Carabao Cup because it's probably the easiest cup competition to win. I use that term quite loosely because you've got to usually beat Man City at some point along the way. So, but it's just one of them. You know, if something doesn't go well at Arsenal, I think everything is turned up to 11 really quick, and it's not really what you want, because it doesn't allow for much consistency. But eight games unbeaten's a good run. They're through, they're in the hat. You know, it wasn't the greatest performance last night from them. It was a bit scrappy in places, but yeah, they showed the quality in the end. And you know, goal for Nketiah was fantastic. His first two touches were incredible, and his third one was absolutely dog muck, but ended up in the back of the net somehow. But he finished it well, and fair enough, Arsenal are through and they can carry on dreaming of bathing in Carabao in February.
Indeed, yeah, you need a shower after that to wash all the sticky Carabao off you. But Matt, when you look at this in terms of performances, we're well used to Premier League managers making loads of changes. Looking at the league game at the weekend, beating Aston Villa, there's only two players that carried over into the game last night. That was Ben White at the back and man of the moment Emil Smith Rowe in midfield. So nine changes to the starting 11, pretty expected. But one of the interesting things is you look at some of the senior names that were included last night: Cedric Suarez, Sead Kolasinac, Ainsley Maitland-Niles to an extent, Nicolas Pepe, Callum Chambers came off the bench and got himself a goal. These are players that have barely kicked the ball in anger in the Premier League so far this season, but they get called into a game like this knowing that they're not regulars under Arteta. Arteta doesn't necessarily trust them in the Premier League, but they still turned in a solid performance. And over the last few years, obviously, there's been criticisms of Arsenal in terms of the culture within the senior players and their attitude and their mentality towards certain types of games. When you've got players like this who know that they're not getting in the first team in the Premier League anytime soon, Arteta doesn't seem to be changing his mind on that. Does that show the work that Arteta is doing behind the scenes, that he can still say to these players, I still need you, and you still need to turn in a performance for me?
Absolutely, and it shows great attitude from those players that were picked as well, because they've not thrown the toys out the pram. They've gone out there and they've been professional, and they've done a job what's been asked for of them. And Arteta recently, like we were saying, it's gone under the radar that they're eight games unbeaten. And yeah, they might be just one bad result away from, you know, Armageddon and Arsenal TV, but it seems like he's got this nice mixture now between youth and experience. And I think that the player that they should be building around is the player you mentioned, Emil Smith Rowe. He uses quality for me, and you know, he's got his whole career ahead of him. He's an Arsenal fan through and through. It reminds me of what we've done with Phil Foden in a way. And like we said, we've got players like Nicolas Pepe that cost Arsenal 70 mil plus, you know, starting and going in and putting in a performance. And he's very inconsistent, Nicolas Pepe. He's not helped himself, but you know, he's come from a team like Lille that have dominated, you know, in France recently especially, and he's coming to an Arsenal team that are in transition. So I think we have to bear that in mind as well. Arsenal right now, they are building for the future. You can see it with the likes of Saka, and like was mentioned, Smith Rowe, you know, and the other players that they've got. So I think Arsenal have got a bright future ahead. I just think they just need to stop putting so much pressure on the coach and on the players, because right now what seems to be happening is very organic. It seems just to be flowing to a nice extent at the moment. So great result for Arsenal last night, like I said, in the hat for the fifth round. And you know, they've won domestic trophies over the last couple of seasons. You know, one more domestic trophy won't do them any harm, and if it helps them have a decent run in the league as well.
Just looking at some of the names that Matt mentioned there, Marley, obviously Eddie Nketiah got the second goal to wrap it up and make sure that Arsenal went through. Alexandre Lacazette came off the bench. There's a lot of focus on him in terms of what's going to happen to him in the summer, but both of them, Nketiah and Lacazette, are out of contract in 2022, and Nketiah, probably based on his return over the years for Arsenal, just looking at some of his stats here, he's actually scored more goals in the League Cup than he has in the Premier League. That probably sums up his Arsenal career. And Lacazette, for me, as an Arsenal fan, I have to say I wouldn't mind if he left. I understand that, you know, we need a couple of senior players still knocking around, and he's useful in some stages, but just working out some of his averages, he averages about 11.5 to 12 Premier League goals a season, which based over four seasons is a pretty, pretty poor return, despite there being issues at Arsenal. Has their time run out? Nketiah, out of contract, arguably maybe hasn't fulfilled what was expected of him coming through the youth ranks at Arsenal. And Alexandre Lacazette turns 31, I think, in February next year, probably coming towards the end of his time at Arsenal. Do you think they're done? Do you think they're finished at Arsenal next summer?
It's an interesting one, because they're all sort of at different stages of their career, but not all of them not really at the level you want to build around, if that makes sense. Like, Lacazette's in his 30s now, coming to the end of his contract. I think Arsenal probably want to do that thing where they not repeat a David Luiz or a Willian situation where you give them a long-term contract and they turn out to be dog muck for the next 2 years. So they're probably not going to want to, you know, probably just going to shake his hand and say, okay, you know, we've had a good run, off you go, and we'll use your wages somewhere else, because I think they do probably need another striker somewhere. Aubameyang's getting older. Arteta seems intent on playing him on the left, which is strange for me. I always think he's a centre-forward and nothing else. But Nketiah, you know, I quite like Nketiah. I think he's a real poacher, but when he doesn't score, I don't think he gives you much in terms of the game. Mm. He doesn't get involved in the build-up and stuff like that. He's a bit like Jermaine Defoe. Like, if he wasn't scoring and buzzing around in the box and scoring tap-ins and good, smart finishes, if he's not doing that, he doesn't give you too much in terms of his overall performance. And in the modern game, that is quite hard to carry in your team, I think. So maybe that's the reason why he hasn't had much league action over the last few years. You've got other lads as well, like Martinelli coming through. Been quite disappointed in him since he came back from his injury last season. I don't think he's done too much to build on that initial sort of promise he had a couple of years ago when he did he score that mad goal against where he just dribbled half the team and walked through? Was it Chelsea or someone like that? Scored a mad goal.
Yeah, it was. I remember that. Was it Stamford Bridge, that thing?
Yeah, it was a brilliant goal, that. And you're thinking, oh, well, you know, Arsenal can build the team around this guy, but they seem to have a few lads in their early 20s and a few lads in their early 30s, and it's like, you know, who do you build around? Do you take a gamble on the younger guys, or do you go out and do you save the money on the older guys and try and buy someone in the summer? But then the situation comes where who can Arsenal pull now from other leagues and stuff like that? Have they got the pulling power still? Which is another question altogether. But yeah, in terms of who they've got, it's like Aubameyang's obviously going to stay. Nketiah looks like he'll leave, and he'll probably bang in. If he goes to the top end of the Championship, he'll score 25-30 goals and come up into the Premier League quite easily. But it's not an easy situation for Arsenal, I don't think, going forward.
Just looking at some of the players that Marley mentioned there, Matt, this idea that there's a lot of players maybe at the start of their career and others maybe coming towards the end of it. Nicolas Pepe is one of the few that finds himself in that sweet spot. He's 26, but he also finds himself right in the sweet spot of inconsistency, because record signing for the club, £72 million, he's come in, there was so much fanfare and expectation around him, but he has consistently underperformed. And last night was maybe him in a nutshell in terms of his career at Arsenal. Arsenal looked to get the ball to him at every opportunity, but he just couldn't really create anything. He couldn't get the better of Stuart Dallas most of the time. He's constantly looking to cut back onto his left foot, and he just frustrated. And without actually playing badly, he's still massively, massively falling short. And obviously, Nketiah and Lacazette are out of contract. There's a different situation with Pepe. He's tied to the club for another 2 seasons. But if an offer comes in for him, do you think Arsenal should potentially look at moving him on based on the fact that he just continues to frustrate?
It all depends on what Arteta thinks, doesn't it, ultimately. Does he see him have a future in his squad? Does he see him having a big big impact in his squad going forward? His goals and assist record then speaks for itself, really, doesn't it? He has been a disappointment coming in, especially, I mean, players like Nicolas Pepe, they get ultimately judged on what they're doing on the pitch, especially when they come for a price tag like that, which is a lot of money, like you said, Arsenal's record signing. He's like I say, 26. He's still got his better years ahead of him, I feel. Like I said, I mentioned before, he's coming to a club that's in transition, and he's come from a club like Lille, like I said, that have dominated in France quite recently. So, you know, I would, if I was Arteta, I'd give him till the end of his contract and see where he's at. Obviously, you risk losing him on a free then, but Arsenal are going to make they're not going to make the money back on him anyway if they sell him. They're not going to get £72 million for him if they sell him now or in 6 months' time to a year's time. So I'd if I was Arteta in that situation, I'd put faith in him. Obviously, if he stays injury free. Give him a consistent run of games in the squad. Obviously, you set up who you're playing against, but you play him against the teams where he's going to have more joy on his left foot and help control the game a little bit more. He's got some decent footballers around him now, so if he's given a little bit more time, I feel he can shine. He's clearly got the talent. We've seen it before. He has produced it in patches, but it just needs to be on a more consistent basis for him to be a success at Arsenal.
Yeah, I'd just say, looking at the picture with Arteta, just have a quick Arsenal soapbox moment. I'm just going back over some of the players that he has gotten rid of during his time at the club, and I honestly think that's probably his biggest success so far, that he's attacked this culture that's existed within Arsenal Football Club of toxic senior players that weren't interested in playing or didn't want to kind of meet the standards that he was looking to implement. And just going through some of the names that, as I say, he has sold: Alex Iwobi was one of his first big ones, Laurent Koscielny, who at the time was club captain, Mkhitaryan, Sokratis, Ozil, Mustafi, and then obviously this summer David Luiz and Willian. I mean, for me personally, other than Willock going to Newcastle and Martinez going to Villa, there's no one that I actually begrudge Arsenal selling. And I see the position with Willock and Martinez because they were offered first-team football. That, for me, has been Arteta's biggest success so far at Arsenal. And I think that's now being borne out in the players that are coming through. Emile Smith-Rowe, Bukayo Saka are looking at the picture and saying, I don't want to be associated with that. And what's been really, really interesting is Arteta has given them the opportunity to essentially say to the senior players, we're the boss men now, we're the best players in this team, and we're going to be the leaders of this team. You either step up, stop moaning, stop sulking, stop looking for excuses, or leave. And Arteta has backed these players, and these players have responded by driving Arsenal up the table. I do get the point, and obviously opposition fans are always waiting to just kind of jibe at Arsenal a little bit. No, Arsenal are never that far away from a crisis, but By placing his faith in these players and these players repaying that in Arteta, we've got a young, dynamic team moving in the right direction. And senior players have had their cards marked. Either they step up and perform or they're out. And I just think Arteta, the way that he's just kind of swept in and utilised that, has probably been his biggest success so far. But, you know, going off on an Arsenal tangent, let's bring it back to last night. Leeds, Matt, in terms of performances for them this season, they've not been fantastic, kind of struggling to ignite. Only one win in the Premier League, obviously got through to the Cup to face Arsenal last night. But it doesn't really seem to be clicking. And there was an interesting comment from Connor Cody when they drew with Wolves last weekend, where he said this thing about it being a basketball game when you play against Leeds, and they try to tire teams out, and just through will and energy and pressing, they eventually get a result. But that's not working this season. They've obviously had issues with Patrick Bamford being out injured. Calvin Phillips has had a couple of injuries, and he's so important for them. What is going on? Why can they not really get it to click? They haven't lost any major players, but it just doesn't seem to be working with nearly the same effect as it did last season.
Well, you just mentioned there, losing Bamford, 17 Premier League goals last season is a lot of goals. So that's ultimately going to hinder them. Like I said, Phillips there, probably suffering from burnout. You know, he had, the Euros, he was one of England's best players, and maybe he's just a bit mentally, physically tired. You can't expect players like him to produce it week in, week out, as much as like people expect it, because of, you know, the standards that he set himself with those performances. Sometimes it just happens, and there's not a lot you can do about it. You've just got to sort of play through it and come out the other end. Leeds may be suffering from a little bit of second season syndrome. Clubs may have figured out, you know, the way they are. They don't really focus so much on defending. They just try and outscore you. And like I said, they just work tirelessly. Bielsa's sides are notoriously, you know, known for outrunning the other team. You know, so this is where they punish you. But sides now seem to know how to set up against them. And, you know, Bielsa's a very, you know, he's a very clever coach. I'm sure he'll sort it out. I think Leeds have got more than enough to stay up. I mean, they're sitting 17th at the moment, 3 points above Burnley and Newcastle. So they've got to sort it out. They've got to sort it out quick. Christmas is going to be crucial for them in the league. They won't be too bothered about going out last night. I don't think silverware's on the agenda for them. I think it's more Premier League survival now, looking at the way they've started. So yeah, there won't be too many grumbles from Leeds fans last night. Obviously, it's never nice seeing your club get beat, but I mean, they didn't do too bad last night. They had more of the ball than Arsenal. They had the same amount of shots and stuff, so it wasn't necessarily Arsenal absolutely, you know, dominating them. Arsenal was just more clinical on the night, and you know, the quicker Bamford comes back, and they've got to keep the likes of like Rafinha fit as well, because he's one of their better players as well. As long as Bamford comes back in and starts scoring the goals again when he comes back into the side, keep Rafinha fit. Keep him chipping in with goals and the assists and the performances, and maybe shore it up at the back a little bit, maybe focus more on starting to keep clean sheets. You know, that'd be my advice to him anyway.
Just looking across to the other game from last night, obviously Arsenal in the hat for the last eight. Chelsea joined the Marley penalty shootout win over Southampton. Probably a bit frustrating on the whole for Chelsea, dominated, but at the end of 90 minutes, just won all, and then they had to rely on Kepa for a few heroics from the spot, kept out Theo Walcott, and Will Smallbone absolutely battered one over the bar to make sure that Southampton didn't go through. But again, like we said with Arsenal with Leeds, loads of changes for both sides. And one of the interesting ones coming in for Chelsea was Kai Havertz. Thomas Tuchel said earlier on this month that he needs to focus on getting back in the team. He needs to try and recapture his form from last season. And it's an interesting situation with Havertz, because you rewind to last season, he was massive for Chelsea. Really important goals, no more so than the winner in the Champions League final. But this season, he's struggling to get in the team. He's struggling to kind of turn in those types of performances. But based on the goal he scored last night, and he was probably man of the match on the night, he still got it, but at the moment, he's not a first-choice pick for Tuchel.
Yeah, he's sort of in and out, isn't he, a bit? When everyone's fit, he probably doesn't get in that team. Mount, Lukaku, and one other, either Werner or him. You know, it tends to be that little trio. But, you know, Lukaku is injured at the minute, so is Werner. I think last week he was the most transferred in player in football, fantasy Premier League history, because everyone thought Havertz is going to do a madness against Norwich, and then he ended up getting no goals, no assists, even though Chelsea put 7 past Norwich, which was crazy. But he popped up last night, bags a goal, great header with the finish, and yeah, it's just that consistency. He's a young player. He could probably do with being in the team every single week, but at a club like Chelsea, you know, you can't expect that. Even though he came in for a ridiculously high fee, you're still not going to get that level of you're in the team every week, because there's options everywhere at Chelsea. They can play different ways with different styles at different times whenever it suits them. So he's just got to knuckle down and find some form, find some consistency and make himself undroppable, which is tough at a club like Chelsea. But he's got the talent to do it. He's got the style, the physicality is what's impressed me about him the most. He's the fact that he must have scored more headers than, well, as many headers as goals with his feet at Chelsea this season, or since he's been there, because he tends to climb really well in like crowded penalty areas, and really he's really brave and uses his body really well, uses his physical attributes really well. So I really like him, but he does need that consistency, and he needs that that sort of statement performance, as if to say, well, you can't drop me because, you know, you've got no Lukaku, so I'm going to score you the goals. And that's his challenge, I think.
Looking at some of the other players that came in last night, Matt, obviously there's always going to be changes, as we mentioned. Havertz is one of them who came in, probably seized the chance that he had, scored the goal, played really well. But there's a couple of other names, Saunagedh, Ross Barkley, Hakim Ziyech, who all came in and didn't start or don't regularly start in the Premier League for Chelsea. Sal's a really interesting one, because coming in from Atletico Madrid, this looked like a tailor-made move. He wanted out of Atletico. There was talk of other Premier League sides being in for him. Chelsea got a bit of a coup on deadline day, but it hasn't worked. Then you've got Ross Barkley, who's been in and out of the team, obviously been out on loan, come back in, doesn't really seem at it. And then Ziyech, who came in from Ajax when they did brilliantly in the Champions League, and again has probably fallen short of expectation. You've got a lot of players at Chelsea just kind of knocking around, not necessarily getting in the team, talented, but their careers, and those three are perfect examples of it, their careers are in real danger of just drifting off.
Well, when you go to a club like Chelsea, you can't, like Marley was mentioning there, you can't expect, even like Kai Havertz, like we said, despite his transfer fee, you just can't get in the side. And unfortunately, it's happening to these three players that you just mentioned. You know, Sal Niguez, I loved him at Atletico Madrid, but if you think about it, it's a completely different way of playing. Under Simeone at Atletico Madrid, it's more like, you know, defensive minded, you know, steely, you know, grinding out games. But Tuchel, he's got this defensive sort of setup, but he also mixes it up with an attack as well. So maybe he's struggling to adapt to it. Bearing in mind he's only just signed, is the Premier League and La Liga are worlds apart in terms of pace. So maybe he just needs that consistent running a team. But like we were saying, he can't expect to get it every week, especially if you're not performing. Ziyech got a wonderful left foot on him. I think has he been injured this season, Ziyech? I'm sure he has. You know, if he's coming back into the side off the back of an injury, he's going to struggle for consistency until he feels 100% fit again. I've got no doubts that Ziyech, when he's picked, in the side will do the business, but like we're saying, it's a consistency thing whether he's in the side or not. And as for Ross Barkley, I remember when he was I think it was the 13-14 season when he first like proper like burst on the scene for Everton, everyone was tipping him as maybe like the next Gascoigne and stuff like that. And then you think, like, you fast forward to now and the way his career's got, I never seen his career going this way. I would honestly, you know what, I would have thought he would have ended up playing for City at some point. I thought when we had Pellegrini, obviously I didn't envisage Guardiola, you know, in the future, but I thought if Pellegrini would have stayed, he would have been perfect for us, because he reminded me a lot of the way Yaya Toure used to play, the way he used to bomb forward from midfield. He used to tech players on at will. Obviously not as good as Yaya Toure, but in that same sort of mould. He was great from set pieces as well. He could just grab games by the scruff and neck and win them. And this was from a very, very young age, you know. And I've heard he's had, you know, problems off the pitch in his personal life and stuff like that, but you know, he basically just needs to knuckle down, and when given the chance needs to just, you know, take it by the scruff of the neck. I liked him at Villa last season. I thought him and Jack Grealish struck up a decent combo, like partnership in midfield, but you know, obviously ultimately it didn't work out for him there, because you know, Chelsea wanted him back, and obviously Villa didn't really feel inclined to take him on a permanent. I don't know if that was part of a deal or not. I don't know if Chelsea offered him that, but I can't see it really working out for him there at Chelsea. I can't see him getting a consistent run in the team. I think Ross Barkley, if he's going to play his way into the transfer window when he gets given the chance, maybe he just needs to start again at another club, because it's a shame when you see such a young talent like him come through there, Everton, and then ultimately just seems to fall off. I don't like seeing stuff like that, and especially from obviously an England point of view as well. Everyone was tipping him to be the next big thing for England, but it's just not happened. So, you know, Ross Barkley, he's still got some years ahead of him. I don't think it's over for him yet, but I just think he does need to seek a new challenge when given the chance.
I do honestly think, and I remember this is when I first started working covering football. Matt, you can remember the season when he scored in the semi-final against City at the Etihad. 2014, was it?
Yeah, that season, yeah.
I honestly would say, hands down, no joke, from either working or from going to cover games, that was one of the best goals I've ever seen live. Honestly, in any stadium where I've been, it was absolutely brilliant. But it's been a hell of a fall from grace from him. Marley, just looking at Southampton in terms of their performance, probably can have very few complaints. Che Adams got them an equaliser, but they never really looked in it. Fraser Forster made some big saves to keep out Havertz and Saul. Will Smallbone, back after I think nearly 10 or 11 months out, got a chance to maybe win it late on. But based on the balance of chances, they can't really have too many complaints. And Ralph Hasenhüttl knows that the bread and butter is the Premier League for them.
Yeah, definitely. I think I said yesterday on yesterday's pod, this is a bit of a free hit for Southampton. If they win, amazing. If they lose, you know, just as long as you don't get absolutely battered, you're not going to think too much into this, the result, I think. Going out on penalties is always a sickener, to be fair, but, you know, like you say, Southampton probably didn't have, like, sights on genuinely winning the Carabao Cup. They're probably waiting to draw a big boy and then get turned over by them, which is ultimately what happened. So their performance was all right, though. They weren't bad. One thing I would take from the game is I don't know why Fraser Forster's not first choice over Alex McCarthy. I think he's a way better goalkeeper. Probably not as sweeper keeper style as McCarthy, because he's slow and quite cumbersome. But he's a way better shot stopper. And when you're down sort of in the bottom half of the league, I think you've always got to play your best shot stopper, and that's Fraser Forster for me. But they had the chances as well. You know, Will Smallbone should have scored that header. I think with a few more games under his belt, he'd have probably stuck that away, but he probably sort of seen his name in lights and thought, Christ, I'm going to score the winner here. And he's ended up putting it the goalkeeper rather than past him. And then he's had a shocker in the penalty shootout, sticking one somewhere, probably landed somewhere in the Thames because it went so high. But it is what it is. You know, these things happen. Southampton probably weren't going to win the Carabao Cup. It's probably a nice time to go out so they can carry on with the league form, which is slowly improving. And yeah, they'll just move on and be quite happy to go into the game against Watford at the weekend and think that's a much more important 90 minutes for us than potentially, you know, going hell for leather and tiring yourself out against Chelsea.
Yeah, true. And obviously, a disappointing night for Southampton. But one little positive, which I always enjoy, is checking that Shane Long is still alive. How he's still knocking around in the Premier League, I have absolutely no idea. But he always puts a smile on my face because he's always dead cheerful whenever he comes on, runs around dead quick without really doing anything. But he's just such a nice fella. The fact that he's still playing Premier League football, even though he hasn't scored a Premier League goal in a million years, is absolutely brilliant. But he did step up and knock in his penalty. But it wasn't enough in the end for Southampton. They are out. Arsenal and Chelsea are through. A bit of bad news for you, obviously, Marley, from a North East perspective, because Sunderland, your beloved Sunderland, how did they get on last night?
I watched the highlights before. They stank the place out. It was 0-0, and they just jammied their way through on penalties.
They did indeed, yeah. Sunderland have joined Arsenal and Chelsea in the last eight. After the break, we're going to be previewing where we think the other five places will be taken up. Three all Premier League ties tonight and eight Premier League teams in action. We're going to be previewing all of that in just a second.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Hello and welcome back to the Football Social Daily midweek show, and we have got Carabao Cup fever. Yes, three games last night to make us a little bit more aware of what's going on in the quarterfinals. Arsenal, Chelsea and Sunderland all through to the last eight. And now in part two of the podcast, we're going to preview the games coming thick and fast tonight. Five matches and three all Premier League ties. Matt, I'm going to go to you first on this one. Burnley against Tottenham is the first of these Premier League games. Sean Dyche, it's fair to say, hates the Cups. I'm just looking at his record here. It's become a bit of a myth, but when you actually look at the numbers, he absolutely hates the Cups. Whether it's Carabao, Capital One, Carling Cup, FA Cup, he just doesn't like them. In the League Cup, they've not been beyond the fourth round as a Premier League club under him. And then in the FA Cup, they've not been beyond the fifth round. And he makes no bones about this. He's not interested in them. His focus is the Premier League. Coming up against Tottenham tonight, obviously Tottenham have got a different situation. They do have a big history in terms of cup competitions, but Nuno Santo has to balance this against the UEFA Europa Conference League. Neither of these teams maybe want to go through, but unfortunately, one of them is going to have to take the horrible place of making the quarterfinals of the Carabao Cup.
That's amazing, because some clubs are, you know,
right, your hand off.
Chop the right hand off. Yeah, that's it. I was going to say that, yeah, but I said it wrong. They'd probably bite your hand off to get in the fifth round of the League Cup. But, you know, I mean, the only game Burnley have won in their last five is against Rochdale in the previous round. So, you know, a win tonight, it could really boost morale. I mean, obviously, you know, they haven't really got the squad to cope with juggling the league and the cup at the same time, but you know, these things, they can go hand in hand with a good league form. Obviously, we know Dyche, it's no secret that he doesn't like, you know, the cup competitions. He wants to keep Burnley in the Premier League. Then fair play to him, do you know what I mean? Fair play to him. But I think Tottenham have got a bit more at stake in terms of that, because you know they'll be more likely focused on, you know, El Sacchio on Saturday against United. But you know, having said that, you know, they're a club desperate for silverware as well. You know, the Conference League should be just used to give the youth players European experience, because let's have it right, I don't think they really want to win it. I don't think the fans really want to win it. You know, the League Cup would take priority over that, if I was a Spurs fan. You know, and the Cup can help build their confidence as well, because you know, Christ knows the players, you know, they need it right now the way they're going. You know, and I think it, the League Cup was probably, yeah, it was the last major trophy they won back in 2008 against Chelsea, you know, nearly 14 years ago now. That is a long time. So for me, there's a lot more riding on it for Spurs tonight. Spurs desperately need silverware. They need to get that sort of like bottle job, like name off the backs. They need that silverware in the cabinet.
So you're going for Spurs through into the last eight?
Yeah.
Marley,
yeah.
Would you agree? The cup hater against the cup liker in Nuno Santo?
I would back Burnley to win this if they take it seriously, but I think I've already seen something from Dyche this morning saying he's gonna like rotate the team.
He might play himself, that's what I've heard. He's gonna play himself.
That's the thing, like I think they could turn Spurs over and have a really good result, which they need in the season, to be fair, but they I feel like they're going to rotate too much, and it's going to be an absolutely awful game of football, and probably get settled by either the odd goal or a penalty shootout, because it doesn't seem like any team are really bothered. And we've seen from Spurs' second team in the European Conference League that they're not the best and struggle against pretty much everyone. So I can see this being almost like a game of anti-football. I think it'd be really poor.
Wow, what an absolute selling point for it. I do like this as well, that Sean Dyche has made so clear that he hates it, that even in press conferences, journalists, because they're so frightened of him, they just don't ask him anymore because he just bites their head off. Right, moving on.
Must give Burnley fans a load of hope that for the future. Yeah, must do.
Yeah, absolutely. Another Premier League game tonight, Brighton against Leicester. Marley, interesting one for these two teams because they've got pretty much exactly polarising form. Going into this, lots of positivity around Leicester. 3 wins on the run, 10 points in the last 4 games. And then in comparison to Brighton, 3 draws and then obviously defeat to City at the weekend. So things have hit a little bit of a sticky spot for the Seagulls. Leicester playing really, really well. We know they're going to make a load of changes, both managers, Potter and Rodgers. But looking at the squads, Leicester's 11-20 is stronger than Brighton's. They don't have home advantage. Brighton beat them earlier on in the season in the Premier League, but would you say Leicester probably just have a bit of an edge in this one?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like Leicester's depth is one of the reasons why they're such a good team. You know, I've said a load of times before, their tactical flexibility is brilliant. They can bring in 2 up front, 1 up front, 3 up front, 5 midfielders, 4 midfielders, 3 at the back, whatever they want to play, it works for them. So with their form improving recently, you know, they beat Brentford. They had that comeback win against Spartak Moscow in the UEFA Cup, Europa League, even last week. There's plenty of strength there if they do decide to rotate, which they probably will. And I feel like that is just about too much for Brighton. Brighton aren't playing as badly as their results suggest. I don't think they had some decent spells against Man City at the weekend, but not enough, I don't think. Even though, you know, Brighton are in a perfect position to have a proper crack at this. You know, they've had a good start to the season. They're in sort of comfortably in the top half. So why not have a proper go at this? Why not play your best team and see what happens? But I feel like even the best team against a good Leicester is going to be a tough one. So we'll see what happens. But I would back Leicester to get it done.
Matt, so you agreed on Spurs probably edging out Burnley, although it's not going to be a cracker. Marley's going for Leicester to win at the Amex. Would you agree, or would you go home advantage for Brighton?
It's a tough one because, you know, obviously coming off the back of a 4-1 defeat against us over the weekend, they probably want to redeem themselves and probably will play their strongest squad possible to get that done. But they have got Liverpool coming up at the weekend, so maybe they've got an eye on that. Leicester obviously won 5 out of the last 6 games, so they're high on confidence at the moment. So yeah, I'd probably agree with that. I'd probably say Leicester go through tonight. They have won silverware in the last 5 years, haven't they? They won the league, they won the FA Cup, so they'll be hungry to add to that.
Moving on, Preston at home to Liverpool. We talked about Sean Dyche not being particularly interested in the Cups, Matt. Jurgen Klopp takes that to another level. He won't even be at Deepdale tonight because
don't even turn up.
This is another level of I'm not interested. He'll be at home. Pep Linders will be taking charge as he normally does in the Carabao Cup. Liverpool, we'd expect them to make a big raft of changes as they did against Norwich in the previous round. They've still got enough senior players to kind of mix in with the kids. Preston are doing pretty badly in the Championship. They're in danger of getting sucked into a relegation battle if they're not careful. This should be straightforward for Liverpool.
Yeah, and Preston, they'll be hurting after the defeat over weekend to Blackpool. Big derby for them. So, you know, what better way to please the fans than to go out and to beat a weakened Liverpool side? Preston, just like you said, was talking about free hits before. This is a free hit for Preston. Yeah, maybe they won't maybe play the strongest team because obviously, like you said, they're being sucked into a relegation battle if they're not careful. But, you know, these are the types of games that these players dream of, you know, playing against a side like Liverpool. Yeah, it's not going to be their strongest 11, and you know Klopp's not going to be there. And let me just say this: if Pep didn't turn up to a league game, he gets slated. So let's just put that one out there. I don't get it. I really don't. I think he should be taking each game as serious as the last one. But whatever, that's clearly the way Klopp likes to handle things. It's going to be an interesting game, like I said. Preston, derby defeat over weekend, not going to be happy. The fans aren't going to be happy, so they're going to want to come out swinging. And Liverpool will make wholesale changes. Well, they didn't really need to be honest, because let's have it right. It was a stroll in the park for him on Sunday, so they could probably play all the players that played against United, because they didn't really have to do much. So, you know, he'll just rest them. He'll rest them for the league game over the weekend. And yeah, Preston, hopefully he'll make a game of it, but we'll see.
Miley, would you hold out a candle for Preston? Things are not looking good for them in terms of league form. Obviously, Derby defeat at the weekend, as Matt mentioned there. Liverpool, despite the fact they're going to make loads of changes, including on the bench with no Jurgen Klopp, do you think there's any chance of a big upset in this one?
No, not much of a candle. Maybe one of those Chinese lanterns in Memorial when they get absolutely smacked. Just because, you know, I don't... Two things on this game for me. One, it's a disgrace that Jurgen Klopp isn't there. I think sending your
thank you
right-hand man is an absolute joke and a complete...
It's disrespectful,
side,
I think.
Middle finger to the competition, which... I don't care if you don't agree with it. It all comes from that Club World Cup thing, doesn't it? A couple of years ago when they were, you know, when they physically couldn't be in two places at once, and he sent...
That's understandable, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't like it. I don't even think if your manager's not asked about turning up, why should your team be even in the competition? But yeah, that's another thing. Second thing, why have Sky picked this game for the live broadcast? When there's Man City,
because
West Ham
wants to watch it at home. That's why. That's why he wants to do it. Yeah.
That's why. Doesn't have a dodgy fire stick to watch it on. No.
You could actually be right on that one. But yeah, I mean, there's two or three other games that you'd rather watch. You'd rather watch Leicester Brighton or West Ham Man City than this one. Maybe not Burnley Spurs, but yeah, you know, that's another thing. But on the game, you know, it doesn't matter who Liverpool play, they will turn over Preston pretty comfortably. You expect to see the B team, Minamino, Origi, Simicass, all these types of players that are Curtis Jones and, you know, people like that. They're all far, far too good for Preston, who are in dire straits at the minute. They're pretty up against it with their own things going on, so they're probably not in a position to turn up and have a go at Liverpool, even though they're on the home turf. But I think it'll be a procession. Can't see anything happening. Unless everyone's not asked about the competition as Jurgen Klopp is, I can't see Preston doing anything, to be honest.
Yeah.
Looking ahead to some of the other games, two more to go. This one for me is potentially maybe a bit of a Premier League banana skin. Marley, I've checked the weather forecast. It is going to rain tonight, so it is officially...
Is it cold and windy?
It is. Oh, yes, it's going to be cold, it's going to be windy. So it is officially a wet Wednesday night at Stoke. Yeah, Stoke Brilliant. City are home to Brentford. Obviously, Brentford's story in the Premier League this season has been massive. Everyone's been really excited to see them there. Thomas Frank's been really interesting, the way that he's kind of just taken the ball by the horns in the Premier League. But they've hit their first little bump in the road in the last couple of weeks. Back-to-back defeats, losing to Chelsea and then losing to Leicester. They go up in the rain, in the wind, to Stoke tonight, who are not doing well either. They've lost their last three in the Championship. But given the fact that Frank doesn't have the biggest squad for Brentford, he's also going to have to make changes. Could this potentially be a little bit of a wobble? We look at some of the other ones. They're going with the form book of Spurs, Leicester and Liverpool to go through. Given the fact that Brentford are probably going to have to rotate so many players, do you think there's a chance maybe that Stoke might be able to turn them over?
I do, yeah. I think Stoke... Stoke's a horrible place to go. They've got that wide open corner, yeah, which allows all the wind in.
In general, or?
Well, absolutely.
Have you ever been there, Marla?
On the train, yeah. And yeah, only not only,
just keep,
only for
just
a couple
stay on
of
the
hours.
Train. That'd be my advice.
Just stay on the train.
Yeah, it's it.
Yeah, the stadium reflects the actual city itself.
Yeah, there's not much there, to be fair. But yeah, you know, it's everything's set up for just a horrible, like, experience. You know, Brentford try and pass the ball around and, you know, play nice, decent football. Stoke try and, obviously, they're not the Tony Pulis side anymore, so don't want to launch into them stereotypes. But still, wet and windy, the corners of the ground are open. They allow all the wind in, and it's another thing that just benefits them a little bit. But obviously, they're not in the best form at the minute. I don't think they've won in the last four. Haven't won since 25th of September when they beat Hull. As you can tell, I'm reading that off Google. That isn't in the front of my head. But you know, they're doing all right in the championship in total. I think they're like 9th or 10th. So they're doing all right, but.
Yeah, the ninth on, they're on 21 points. The joint 21 points with five other teams, and Luton are sitting fifth. You can tell I got that off Google as well.
Well, there you go. Like, they're not.
So they're all fighting for the playoffs.
Not, they're not out of this, are they? So I feel like they'll fancy it tonight. Again, it's a bit of a free hit. If you're going to knock out a Premier League team, you're going to want to draw one that are, like, you know, they have other things on the plate. Like, Brentford is staying up. That's their number one remit this year. But I do like what Thomas Frank said in this pre-match press conference. He said, like, why can't Brentford win the Carabao Cup? I love that. Try and win the Carabao Cup, mate. Go on, go for it.
That's the attitude to have, isn't it?
They had a good run last year when they knocked Newcastle out in the quarters, or the I think it was, or to get to the quarters or whatever it was. Turned us over quite comfortably and passed us off the pitch as well. So, you know, a year down the line, it feels like they are going to take it seriously again. So it's looking like Brentford will turn up and try and do a professional job. But I'd still stay away from it on my betting accumulator. I think that's the most 50-50 game of the round. But yeah, Brentford will fancy it. And even though it will be a bit uncomfortable, they'll still fancy themselves to have a nice little test and ultimately go through.
Matt, just looking at Brentford, obviously there, as Marley said, that Thomas Frank has kind of, you know, raised the question, why shouldn't Brentford push to maybe win the Carabao Cup or at least make some big inroads in it? And you look at this situation and, yeah, he probably is going to rotate because they've got Burnley at the weekend and he has to stick to the day job of the Premier League. But he might also be looking at this and thinking, look, we've got a Championship side, they're not playing particularly well. If we beat them, get a home draw, maybe, you know, a slightly favourable one in the quarterfinals, then we're into the semis. And then, you know, we're two games away from Wembley across the two legs in the last four, and, you know, inevitably they're probably going to play Manchester City in the final because everybody always does. Is there maybe a school of thought that he goes, listen, can you just squeeze one more game out of me from the Premier League 11? You know, we'll get you rested up for the weekend and just see how we get on. Or do you think he's just going to press the panic button and just make 10 or 11 changes?
No, I think he'll play a fairly strong side. I mean, they've lost the last two league games, but bearing in mind they were against Chelsea and Leicester, who are quality sides, so I don't think it'd be fair to judge them on those two results. I think they've been a treat to watch this season, especially at home. I think they've been a breath of fresh air for the Premier League. Thomas Frank's style of management, his attitude, everything about them at the moment is very, very positive. And I think, like we say, why not? Why not go and try and win, you know, the League Cup? You know, you're in a cup competition. That's what you want to do. You want to win these things. This is why I can't understand these managers that just go, no, I'm not having it, you know what I mean? I just want to survive in the Premier League every year, or I can't be arsed with it at all because it doesn't agree with my philosophy on the way fixtures are in England, you know. So this for me is really refreshing. I want to see Brentford win tonight, and I want to see them play the strongest team that they possibly can, you know, bar any injuries. So yeah, Thomas Frank's been an absolute breath of fresh air for the Premier League, and I quietly want them to do well this season. I really want them to do well in the Premier League, and if they get a good cup run out of that, you can't really argue that they would have had a successful season, especially if they stay up.
Right, looking at to the last game tonight, West Ham against Manchester City. Obviously, Jurgen Klopp, because he's got control of the remote control in the Klopp household, has deemed that Preston and Liverpool is going to be on TV. But Matt, I'm sure you'll find a way to watch this somehow tonight.
Yeah, I'll be watching it.
In terms of form, looking at this, West Ham have been absolutely excellent, and they're actually in better form than Manchester City coming into this. 6 wins from the last 7 across all competitions. They put United out in the previous round. Man City have only won 5 in that same run. So West Ham do have a little bit of an edge. But as we mentioned right at the top of this show, City love the Carabao Cup. Pep Guardiola loves the Carabao Cup. He'll be going hell for leather to get through, but there will be some young players rotated in. Just looking at the Wickham game earlier on in the competition, Egan Riley and Mbete, Burns, Wilson, Esbrand, and then we all know about Cole Palmer, who came off the bench to score in the Champions League last week. He is going to play a few kids. He's going to play a few squad players. What type of team do you think Guardiola is going to put out tonight? Obviously, we know a bit about Palmer. Who else should people be looking out for that's the next one off the production line for City?
Well, to be honest, Fergal, the majority of City's youth team played in the 5-0 defeat to Rotherham in the EFL Trophy last night. there was only two that didn't feature that was involved in the Wigan game. It's Cole Palmer and Sammy Dozer. You know, so I expect those two to be in the squad tonight, and you know they may feature depending on how the match is panning out. West Ham, different beast nowadays. They beat Man United in the last round, but you know a lot of teams are beating Man United at the moment, so I wouldn't give them too much credit for that. You know, but they are doing really well, West Ham, absolutely, and I'm sure Jim will be very, very pleased to hear me say that. City will play. Just again, Guardiola wants to win this trophy. We all know it. He's going for fifth in a row, record breaking stuff that. So he's going to play his strongest team possible, but he will have the mixture between youth and experience. Couple of players coming back from injury as well. We've got Sterling coming back from injury, Zinchenko hopefully at left back to give Cancelo a rest, because you know Christ knows he needs it. He's been covering every single blade of grass this season. For me, the way we've been performing, you know, you can talk about Bernardo Silva, you can talk about Foden, you can talk about De Bruyne, you can talk about these attacking players, but Cancelo, the way he's just been this season, the way he's performed, especially he's playing out of position, bearing in mind he's playing left back, guy's right back, but you could play him anywhere, you could play him anywhere on that pitch. I touched on it last week in the on the podcast when we was reviewing the Bruges game, the way he's underlapping runs, he's going inside the opposition's defence and he's finding himself in these positions where he can score goals or he can assist goals. So him, for me, this season's been absolutely fantastic. But getting away from that, Like I said, Pep's taking this competition very, very seriously. West Ham banging form at the moment. He's going to have to watch for West Ham's set pieces, because they have been fantastic from set pieces. Moyes has got them, just like I said, different beast. You know, we associated West Ham with being quite soft over the last few years or so, conceding goals, but now they're very, very tough, especially at home. I'd back them to beat any team at the moment at home, the way they are. So if we're not at our best tonight, I reckon West Ham could knock us out. But we are coming off the back of some very, very good performances. Brighton in the first half, we might have fell off in the second half a little bit, but you know, with the first half, the way we played, you know, I can forgive that. The way we played in Bruges as well was fantastic. I don't think Pep's going to allow for any mistakes tonight. Obviously, if West Ham are the better team on the night and beat us, I'll hold my hands up and say fair play to them. But if we're at our best tonight, and say we're maybe 2 or 3 up with half an hour to go, I will expect to see the likes of Idozi and Palmer make an appearance. But other than that, Pep's going to play his strongest team possible.
Outside the top three of Chelsea, Liverpool and Man City, Marley, West Ham are the form team in the Premier League. This is an interesting one to call, because as Matt said, at home, West Ham at the minute, you'd back them to almost beat anybody, put United out in the previous round. But you've got so much good form going into this from West Ham, but Pep Guardiola is Mr. Carabao Cup, and it's difficult, despite how well West Ham have done and the deserved praise they've had this season, it's difficult to see Guardiola not pushing for what would be a ninth title in the League Cup and make City the most successful team in the competition ever.
Yeah, I think he obviously loves the competition. You know, you can't get polar opposites between how he treats it and how Jurgen Klopp treats it. It's as if it's, you know, the sacred... the sacred trophy in English football, the way Guardiola goes for it every year. So it's you know, he's obviously going to turn up, he's going to play a strong team. I think it's going to be pretty much the Premier League team that you see week in, week out. Maybe like Palmer and people like that coming off the bench or something. But West Ham are going to have to be at their best, because I think they've won 6 out of the last 7. But you know, this is a different beast in Man City. This competition is everything to them at the minute. You know, they'll go in, they won't be thinking, it doesn't really matter if we lose. They're thinking, we want 5 in a row, because it's another thing for Guardiola to pin himself on. You know, no one's ever done it before. And you know for a fact, Guardiola will want to do that. He'll want to be the first man to do it. So West Ham have got it tough, but it's probably the game of the round, to be honest. And it's just staggering why it's not on TV, but that's another thing.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I can't find it online, but Marley, I think if you try j.klopp@liverpoolfc.com, forward your email complaints to that and see if he gets back to you. Right, we're going to...
Nah, he's right in what he's saying. He's right in what he's saying there, Marley. It's just... It's polar opposites. Why? I don't get why you would just treat a competition with such disdain and disrespect. It just doesn't... It doesn't sit right with me, that really don't.
Yeah. Nobody is a fan of Jurgen Klopp on the podcast today. But we are going to wrap it up for today's show. The form book generally has been followed for tonight's game in the Carabao Cup. But as Marley pointed out, watch out for that wet and windy Wednesday night. Wow, I managed to get that out. Wet, windy, wild Wednesday night in Stoke. Right, I'm going to go and give my voice a rest. Matt, Marley, thanks so much for your time.
Cheers, guys.
Nice one.
Great stuff. Thanks so much as ever. And of course, here on the Football Social Daily, we are your daily Premier League podcast. If you click subscribe on this episode, you can get a brand new one as soon as it is ready. Marley, Niall and Callum will be on duty tomorrow reviewing those games from tonight and looking ahead to another massive weekend of Premier League action. Don't forget to check out the show then, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.